Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello. Oh no, are you okay?
Sorry, a piece of dust like went into my throat the second that the song ended.
I'm so sorry. Could you stop eating dust while we record for 2 seconds,
maybe? I know. I'm just like, but I want more dust.
Listen, it's filling, low carb. I'm so sorry. This is Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison. And sorry for the coughing fit.
This is a podcast where you choke on dust for an hour and a half.
No, honestly, there's an audience for that somewhere, but probably on OnlyFans.
Yeah. Listen, yeah, sorry, this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie. Yeah, we're so sorry. We've been doing this for a couple of years. The whole thing is held
somehow
together.
Every time it's the first.
Tape and twine. No, but if we ever do an OnlyFans, I want it to be only like deeply fucked up horror things. Like it would be like you inhaling dust or something.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, that's like what it would have to be.
Yeah.
How are you?
I feel like I've reached a point in my life where I'm like, I have to totally revisit what my life is so that I have more free time. I've reached a point where I'm like, this is not a human life. I don't want to live like this. I think it's just turning 40 where I'm like, yeah. I don't know whether I thought, like, my idea of success in the entertainment industry was always such like a nebulous thing. And now that I'm a lifer, I'm like, okay, I cannot burn myself out. But that is my inclination. And I've talked about my brain issues, obviously. So I feel like I'm just sort of, in a positive, healthy way, I think revisiting all the parts of my life and sort of trying to figure out how to set up, you know, something sustainable and like positive rather than every Friday I'm so exhausted I just go to bed at 8 p.m., which is fine. I think there's nothing wrong with that, but... So I don't know what that I'm in a contemplative mood. How are you doing, Allison?
Yeah, that's fair. I'm good. Not a lot going on over here. Though I did see a friend of mine who has a toddler posted a video of going to his preschool.
Aww.
And they brought out, it was like one of those days where like somebody comes with like 4 different animals and like you just get to see animals. And I'm like,
heaven.
Can we do that now?
Yes.
Like
that's
We were talking about it. I was like, for my birthday, I would definitely, like, find a place that's reasonable to do it.
Yes.
Like, everybody, like, chip in $20 or, like, I'll pay for it. Like, who cares? And just, like, have one of these experts show up with, like...
I love that.
A couple of different animals and just, like, this is a hedgehog. Here's a large iguana. This is, and just, like, see them and,
please,
like, get to learn about it.
I would absolutely love that. I'm begging you to do that. I guess I could do it for my 40th, I suppose.
Yeah. I kind of like, I'm sad that this didn't come up before my 40th because I would have definitely done that, but I'll just do it next year. But it was Mike Racine who posted the video and I was like talking to him and I was like, oh my God, that looked crazy. He was like, I was sitting on the floor with like 15 toddlers and then this lady pulls out a wallaby and I just yelled, what?
I mean.
But I'm like, I would have the same reaction. Like if somebody just like pulled a wallaby out.
I also feel like
best day of my life.
Like if you're a kid, a wallaby is the Rolling Stones. Like you were seeing the Beatles, like their first concert in America, and it's a wallaby because you're 3 years old. You've never seen anything like it.
You'd lose your mind.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. So I'm just like plotting how to get. It's like I know that zoos exist or whatever, but like it's not the same as like somebody like holding a hedgehog and like telling you about what it eats.
You know,
and then you get to maybe pet it.
Do you remember? Patty Harrison, hilarious, comedian and actress who, I don't know if she, I guess she's in LA, I don't know if she's doing stand-up, but Alice and I both know her from stand-up in New York.
Yeah.
And remember when Facebook thought I was going to do TV? And a friend of ours, Sachi Ezra, worked on a Facebook show and it would have like different sort of web series. And Patty Harrison had an animal show where they had an animal guy, and it's just, it's one of the, still one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my fucking life.
Oh my God,
it is
so good.
A guy who, like, obviously, like, lives in Staten Island. I mean, his name, I couldn't tell you, was, like, Jungle Steve or like Terry, Amazon Terry. Like it was some, the name they
Jungle
all have.
Jungle Steve or Terry. Like, and, like Jungle Steve or Terry.
And she like he just has like a parrot and then it's just her riffing to the point where this guy is so annoyed with her. It's so funny. Please, yeah, you can still find it. Seriously.tv, that's what it was. I mean,
Yeah,
RIP when Facebook thought it was going to be a streaming service. But yeah. One of them is just called Patty Reviews an Otter. It's so funny.
That's so funny.
Just like both her being incredibly naturally funny and this animal guy just having absolutely no. Somebody uploaded it to Nature Nick. I think it's Nature Nick. Yes, Nature Nick.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
And it's, please watch this as soon as you're done listening. It's so funny. You will not regret it. And the editing is hilarious. So many
she's
talented
just
people.
Such a talent. That, you know, and also just like the shiniest hair in the biz.
Incredible hair. Phenomenal hair. It reminds me, my brother graduated from OSU. Oh my God. I don't know what happened there. My brother graduated from OSU. And when he graduated, it was Jack Hanna, who's famously an alumna and worked at the Columbus Zoo for a long time, the former director of the Columbus Zoo. And he talked about, he's done multiple, like he comes and talks like, you know, that kind of thing. But he's talking about, I believe he has a dyslexia and sort of like how he found his way to animals. And, you know, he grew up on a farm and he became a veterinarian, but like had this experience with, you know, with education that was really difficult, but then like found like sort of zoology and like his passion. Allison, he talks for 15 minutes and he said, now it's time to bring out the animals. Allison, in the middle of his graduation, he just brings out like a snow leopard or whatever. Like he just brings out.
That's like literally the only good graduation.
And everyone's
speaker.
Like, ah, it was like we were toddlers again. It was so great. And also it was so like he didn't allude to the fact the animals were coming out. But you that is his thing. You would go on like late
you,
night
like,
TV.
Hope, but yeah.
And then he's just like, anyways, enough about me, here are the animals. And everyone's like, yes, yes. And to know that he built a career on knowing that all of us from a 3-year-old to a 300-year-old. That's what they want to see. They want you to bring out the wallaby. And he was right. And it was really great to see someone in there be doing exactly what they should be doing and found their place in the world. And that was a really lovely graduation message.
I love that. Wow. Well, I hope we all get to see more. My friend's husband, when he was growing up, his dad was the reptile guy that brought all the reptiles to the elementary schools. And I was like, oh my God, he must have been like the coolest kid. Yeah.
That's adorable.
And he still does it now. So, like, their son gets to, like, meet snakes all the time. And I'm like, that's wild.
The cycle of life. That's really beautiful.
The cycle of life. Yeah.
Oh, hello. It's Hallie here to tell you about our next Ruin Live show, which will be Sunday, April 28th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And the movie we're doing is, of course, Immaculate, starring the one and only Sydney Sweeney. If you'd like to join us again on Sunday, April 28th, please get your ticket at moment.co/ruined. We'll have merch. It is our old merch, but it will be there. Of course, we'll have new merch one day, but that day will not be Sunday, April 28th, when we will be ruining Immaculate. So please join us again. You can get your tickets at moment.co/ruined. Hope to see you there.
So we are, of course, still knee deep in Kevin Bacon month, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Aye.
So we are going to pull up the Oracle of Bacon.
Yes.
So this connection is James Wan, who, of course, we talked about, director of Malignant, horror icon. And James Wan apparently directed a 2007 movie called Death Sentence.
Okay.
And let me just tell you, Kevin Bacon was in a lot of movies that I have literally never heard of.
Yeah. That feels like I should have heard of it, too. Like,
yeah, directed by James Wan, starring Garrett Hedlund and Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon stars the man who is on his way home from a hockey game with his son, Brendan, stops for gasoline. He sees a quote-unquote street thug kill his son while robbing the station, believing the justice system will fail him. Kevin Bacon goes after the killer himself, setting up a war between him and the killer's older brother, played by Garrett Hedlund. Never has one atom of that entered my mind until I found out about it through this machine. So thank you, Oracle of Bacon, for giving me this.
So it's James Wan directed a movie with Kevin Bacon and directed the movie we're doing today.
No, I'm sorry. He's actually the producer of the movie today, which I decided that counts.
That counts.
Yeah.
If you're above the line payroll, it counts.
If it's above the line, baby, it's above board. And also, this is made up and it doesn't matter. So
it doesn't matter. We're just picking movies.
But yes, he is one of the producers. I also probably could have gotten to Kevin Bacon through the named actress that I know it is Maria Bello. And she's been in a million things.
A million things.
Yeah, so I gotta imagine, oh my God, she's in Coyote Ugly. That's right.
Yes, she was in Coyote Ugly.
So actually, maybe I'll just put her in the Oracle.
I'm curious. I bet you could get there. Because like Coyote Ugly like had a lot of stars, but it also had like John Goodman is in Coyote Ugly.
Okay, so Maria Bello was in a movie called Grown Ups with an actor named Dennis Dugan. And then Dennis Dugan was in the movie She's Having a Baby with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, that movie. Ugh, excellent use of that Kate Bush song.
Oh, I see. I don't know it. She's Having a Baby.
Oh, it's good. I mean, it's good in that I saw it in the 90s. And
cute.
But they used this woman's work. And
oh, hell yeah.
I'm never mad when that song is getting used.
I remember one time Ice-T posted a video Ice-T posted a video of his wife Coco just her butt out in a bikini floating in a pool floaty with that song over it. And that's exactly correct. That is what I think their relationship is. That's how I want to.
That's all of it.
That's how I feel about a woman. You know, I feel like this is I just saw this, my wife in the pool, and I had to make this piece of art and share it with you. And that's why I was associated that song with.
Yes, that's so funny.
So let us begin. This movie is actually directed by...
We haven't said the name of the movie yet.
I'm sorry. The movie is called Lights Out. It is from 2016. Never heard of it. And it's actually directed by a wonderful director named David S. Sandberg. And this is his directorial debut. And I knew about David S. Sandberg because he sort of famously arose when there was still the promise, which I also think was the promise of... comedy in a lot of ways. And it's still there, but not in the way that I think it was in like 2013. He made an excellent horror short and put it on YouTube. And that sort of allowed him to make this movie. Like it's the short, like the 2-minute version of what this movie is, right? It's so good. It's so scary. Please watch it again after you're done listening. His name on YouTube is Pony Smasher. And the name of the video is also Lights Out. It's from the Who's There Film Challenge. It is so well done. To do something this accomplished with like effects. He's a practical effect person, like, and also his wife stars in all of his shorts, and his wife also makes a cameo in the movie. Her name is Lotta Loston, and I think he also, if you follow him on YouTube, and if you like horror, you should follow him because he talks about how he films stuff. So during the pandemic, he uploaded a bunch of different stuff they obviously just shot in their house. So it like starts his wife, she's always a woman alone in the house. It's like, and again, a scenario we've seen a million times, but to make it seem fresh really is incredible. So he sort of explains how he shoots certain things. He has a video called Communicating Your Vision as a Director. I think if you're someone interested in directing horror, like he's just someone who is both really good at his job and also very generous in how he explains how he did it for other younger burgeoning horror people. So he also explains like specific software he uses that I don't know anything about, but like, just something about that I really appreciate and sort of how he came up. That being said, I do have we'll discuss this movie because by the end of it, I'm like, all right, well, I would have made a different decision with the ending, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay, interesting.
We always like to have Allison watch the trailer to let her get a taste of what she's about to see. Mm-mm. Allison, what did you think of the Lights Out trailer?
This trailer, like, fucked me up. And it's, like, broad daylight, like, almost morning. You know, it's, like, early in the day here. It's just, like, vibes are good. I was watching garbage TV. I watched this trailer, like, I am upset.
Yes.
The trailer opens, I have no idea where in the movie this is, but, like, it's just, like, a woman who I think is on a custodial staff somewhere. Mm-hmm. And she, like, the lights are on in a room, and then she turns them off and sees, like, the outline of this woman in a doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just keeps turning the light back on and she's not there and off and she's there. And it's just totally silent. And she's like, it's almost scary. Cause I know then there's like other scenes where like the creature person woman we're seeing is like crouched and weird, but like, it's actually scarier when she's just appears to be like the shadow of a regular person standing up.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like it. It's so scary.
Yeah. It's, really well done. The opening sequence is really sets you up for the rest of the movie. We also like to take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of somebody standing in the doorway in the dark watching you?
Well, now, especially that I've like seen this version of it, I don't care for it.
I feel like it's got to be one of the most terrifying images because what it implies about the person. They're not turning on the light. They might not even know about a light switch.
They're not like, hey, what's up? Like just standing still silently in a darkened doorway. I don't like that. I never want to see that. I hope I never do.
And in reality, obviously, you can assume there's a supernatural element to this film. But if you were to see that in reality, well, then that person's trying to scare you. And sort of in the stranger's way, that seems worse than a ghost. A ghost might just be confused about what's going on. A person, I don't like to see it.
No.
And then finally, before we get started, Allison, would you like to guess the twist?
Guess the twist.
I'm going to guess that the figure is the ghost or demon reincarnation of a little girl who Maria Bello, like it was like, I'm going to guess it's Maria Bello's fault that like whatever happened to this girl happened to her. And I think then Maria is going, it's going to be like a bad ending where you're like, oh, like she's going to like kill her once and for all or something. Like it's not like redemption. It's doubling down on not wanting something to like bother you anymore.
Great. All right. Fabulous. Let us begin ruining 2016's Lights Out. We open on a glowing streetlight outside a textiles warehouse. It's night, and we see the manager, a man named Paul, is closing up shop, but he gets a call from his son, Martin, who I'm going to say is about 10 years old. Okay. And he says, when are you going to be home? Paul says, it'll be about an hour. I'm just wrapping up. Where's your mom? And Martin says, she's here. She's talking to herself again. Martin says, I know. I understand your concern. Me too. But I'm working on getting her better. I'll be home with you real soon. And we'll talk about this. Don't worry. Meanwhile, we see the actual warehouse, which is gigantic, like 12-foot tall washer dryer, mannequins, reams of textile, diaphanous plastics. Just everywhere you look, there are more shadows and textures and terrifying things that look like a human eye and a human body. So a perfect place for a horror movie. I love to see it.
Great setting, but like I don't want to be there.
Paul hangs up his phone. He opens up a file box with sort of old damaged papers inside. And on the label, it says Mulberry Hill. His coworker Esther, again, Lotta Lowstein, the wife of the director, she stops in and says, do you want anyone should I put anyone on overtime? And he goes, no, sorry. I'm just closing up. You could go. Esther goes to shut off the lights in the warehouse, which is both impossibly dark and then also had these brilliant sort of spotlight-like pools of light. So as she walks through, she sort of passes in and out of darkness into light. They're the only people there. Everyone else is gone. This is like, I mean, like 9 p.m. or something, right? Mm. She walks into, as you'll see in the trailer, if you want to get a little taste of this, she walks in a room with like racks of clothing, a table. I presume that's where things are cut. Stands in the doorway, and we see on the other side of the room is another doorway. It is dark. It is empty. When Esther shuts off the light, Allison, suddenly there is the figure of a woman standing in the doorway facing her.
No.
A woman's figure, one of the scariest figures of all. Not the number one, but to be it is interesting where it's like it is gendered. It is a gendered figure. Which does, not that it like is scarier, but just sort of funny, like, oh, it's immediately a woman. Oh, well, she's doing stuff that not a lot of ladies do.
Yeah.
Oh, she's not acting like how in my mind a woman should be acting.
Yeah,
you know?
Not at all.
And in that way, I should be more feminist. You know what I mean? Like, a woman can do whatever she wants. And this woman is going to be doing whatever she wants for the rest of the film.
It seems that way.
Esther flips the light back on. No figure. Flips it off again. The figure is standing there. She does it a couple more times. Flip it on. Flip it off. And every time it's off, we see the outline, the silhouette of the woman in the doorway. Allison, she turns it on. And when she turns the light back off again, the woman is now standing mere feet in front of her.
No.
Suddenly. And there's an excellent effect in this movie where her eyes are glimmering in the dark. So there's like a wet light of her eyes staring at Esther out of a dead dark screen. It's so good. It's really well done.
I think there must
be like some lizard part like that this director's really good at playing at, where it's like your brain is scanning what's going on. Yes. And then it sees an eye in the darkness. Like there's probably like some like predator,
yes.
like, you know, like, okay, so it's dark and now I see there is something sentient coming towards me.
Yes.
So I jumped. I saw this in the theater too. Like this whole opening sequence terrified me. Esther, of course, books it. Meanwhile, Paul's still talking on the phone and he's talking to his stepdaughter, Rebecca. And he says, you know, I just want to talk about this. We have to stop her from locking herself in the closet again. We have to do something. Okay, we don't have to call it an intervention. We'll just want you to meet up and talk to her. You know, obviously planning how to talk to his wife who's clearly going through something.
Yeah.
But he's still on the phone and he's really distracted. So when Esther goes back and tries to say, like, I think I saw something. I don't know if it was a person, it might have been a person, but I couldn't figure out what it was. Like, she's panicking, but he's on the phone. So he's like, just go. Just leave.
And it's like,
he's like not listening.
You need this info.
But also, also if there's a person that you're like lock a person in overnight, like, you have to deal with this.
Yeah.
But she's like, you don't have to tell me twice. But Esther does warn Paul, please be careful when you leave. But again, he's still on the phone, obviously otherwise engaged. When he hangs up, she's left. And he then walks through the warehouse space, past the industrial washer dryers, past these mannequins, and hears something clatter, of course.
No.
And he walks to the end of the warehouse, and he turns around. And when he does, he sees the figure of the woman now crouching in the middle of the aisle.
Top 10 horror position.
Because it implies that you're about to make some sort of propulsive movement, yes, either exactly. forward or up, and that's no good.
No, very froggy.
Crouching, because she's not picking up some change. She didn't drop her purse.
What I mean? She's not looking for a contact business. Down there. She's preparing for
leverage.
Something. Yes.
Yes. And he goes, Esther? It's like, no. That's not Esther, dude. That's some sort of skeletal nude demon who has like a bob or whatever.
I mean,
like,
kind of has like a haired style.
Right. You just saw Esther. She had her clothes on and like flesh on her limbs.
Yeah.
So it's not her. Unfortunately, Allison, even worse for this particular place is the lights are on a motion sensor. So because Paul freezes, the lights go out in the warehouse and he has to frantically wave them back on. And of course, when they turn back on and off again, the woman is closer than before. He panics and he's no dummy. So he runs back towards the office.
Okay.
He trips and falls.
Not great.
And he's thinking, oh my God, how did I trip? He looks down. Clearly he has been grabbed because he's not simply fallen and his keys fallen out of his hand, but his pant leg is ripped open and the flesh of his leg is torn open.
Grabbed by
And he
what?
Looks behind him. And in the darkness in between the spotlights, we see the woman standing up.
Great.
Well, Allison, he runs into his office, which, again, unfortunately at this point, an office door is not going to cut it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't feel like this lady gets stopped by a door.
No, but he's able to get the door closed, and he grabs a bat that he has for protection. He turns, the office door opens, and Paul focuses on the darkness beyond the door to the point where he doesn't notice that behind him, the woman has appeared and then basically hauls him into the air, like jerks him up in the air like a marionette. And when the lights come back on in the warehouse, we see Paul's broken, bloody, sort of marionette collapsed body in one of the pools of light. We join Rebecca, who is Paul's older stepdaughter from his wife's first marriage, and Martin, his son's stepsister. So he is now married to Rebecca's mother. But Rebecca's an adult, right? She's from like a previous marriage.
Okay.
And she's in bed with her boyfriend, Brett. And Brett is clearly like thirsty for the boyfriend title.
A man who wants to commit? Talk about a fantasy. Yeah.
But I do think it's like this is a great example of like he wants to commit specifically because she so clearly doesn't.
Yes.
So I think he has sort of been put back on his heels. I mean, maybe he would want to commit, but it's like her rejection makes him sort of anxious, as we've all been there. And he's like, what are the chances we'll go again, you know? And he's like, oh, no, we're not having sex again. I'm going to take a shower. And we see in the mirror after a shower, Rebecca's looking, and she sees she has, like, self-harm scars on her arms, presumably from her teenage years, you know, in the past, which we'll find out about. She comes in, and Brett's sort of, like, laying around, wanting to hang out. And he's like, are you sure I can't stay over just one night? It's been 8 months. If I was Jason for 8 months, I couldn't stay the night. That would be it for me. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I would need more, you know? He says, it just seems like something a boyfriend would do. And Rebecca said, who said anything about a boyfriend? But then Brett's face looks sad. And she's like, oh, I mean, you're the only one I'm dating. It's like, okay, obviously you have commitment issues.
Yes, clearly.
Because of what we will find out.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Understandable. Yeah. And he's like, well, can I leave like a pair of jeans here? Like, what if I left one sock here? And she's like, no, like, let me just get out of here. I need to get ready. And so while she's getting dressed, he takes off one of his socks and hides it to like as a joke. And when he goes outside, she calls him through the window and sort of this romantic moment. She's like, hey. And of course, he's thinking like, oh, she's going to invite me back. And then she throws his sock out the window to him. Get this sock out of my apartment.
You're not leaving anything here, sir.
Over at Martin's place, who again is Paul's son and a 10-year-old boy.
Okay.
He hears his mother talking. And this is where we meet his mother, Sophie, played by the wonderful Maria Bello. And she's in her room talking pretty much nonstop, very quietly, but talking to someone who is not there. And poor little Martin has like little car pajamas on. And he goes to see like, hey, how's it going in here, Mom? And he hears her say, I'm sorry, I just don't know what to do. She turns and she sees her son and she tries to play normal, of course. Yes. And she says to Martin, oh, hi. What's up? Which it reminded me of the what's up ads. It's like, well, your 10-year-old son's concerned about what seems to be going on. You're just talking to no one.
Yeah.
And she says, Martin, go back to sleep. But before he can, he hears a creaking sound from inside Sophie's pitch dark closet. But that's enough for him. He's like, okay, I'll go back to my room. And when he turns to go, he looks back and he sees around his mother's door frame a long-fingered hand.
No.
And sort of the side of a woman's head in shadow.
No.
Emerge from behind the door frame.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
He runs back to his room. He shuts and locks his door. And, of course, he hears someone trying his doorknob. And the doorknob rattles until there's a huge thud. Someone slamming their body against it, but then leaving it be. The next day at school, Martin has fallen asleep in class.
Yeah, because I bet he doesn't sleep a lot at home.
Exactly. So obviously he's not doing well, but the school nurse can't get a hold of Sophie. She says there's someone else we can call, so they call Rebecca. And Brett drives her over to pick up Martin. And Brett says, no, it's obviously fine. I'm happy to help. I just didn't know you had a brother. Which, again, 8 months in would be weird, especially a 10-year-old brother
that you might
have to help with, you know?
That feels like it would have come up. It'd be hard not
organically
for it to come up.
Yeah. To me, it'd be more like a first date thing, yeah. I think, you know?
Here's what my family's deal is, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously she's not wanting to be upfront about her family because of what we'll find out about them. And so they have to meet with a representative from Child Protective Services. Her name is Emma, and she's been assigned to Martin's case and has been working on it since Paul died. And the implication is it's been really recent. She doesn't say exactly, but I'm going to say it's been a month.
Okay.
Like, it's been a month since Paul died. So the fact that Sophie, their mom, is sort of starting to have symptoms like maybe she had in the past doesn't seem unusual.
Yeah.
Because, again, Rebecca is, you know, older and has been through this. But it's very scary to Martin to, like, he could tell something's going on, and now Paul, the person he could speak to about it, has died. So, yeah, Rebecca, sorry, you're up next. You know, you got to step in here and help him.
Yeah.
And Emma says, yeah, I'm so sorry about your father dying. And she says, nope, he was my stepfather. Paul was my stepfather. My actual father left when I was 10. So Emma finally asks, so how's Martin's mom doing? Like, how's she doing? And Rebecca says, well, if you're asking, is she taking her antidepressants? She is. But, you know, obviously it's been hard since Paul died. Yeah. And Emma says, do you know if Martin's been sleeping at home? Because this is the third time he's fallen asleep this week. Like, he clearly is exhausted. We just kind of want to check in, like, maybe something's going on. The three of them go to the nurse's office where Martin is waiting. And Martin turns to his sister and goes, is this why you left home? And Rebecca's like, no, it's more complicated. But also, clearly, yes, you know? Yeah. And Martin says, could I stay at your house? Like, can I really need to go to sleep? And Rebecca's like, you're not going to like my place. I got a bunch of weird, scary posters on the wall. And Martin's like, Ted, he's like, please, I just need to sleep.
Right. It's like, well,
I'm just,
is there a
I don't care.
Lady who hides in the shadows that's clearly trying to get more involved in our lives living there? Because,
yes.
Like, if she's not there, like, I'm good with posters.
Right, exactly. Like, I'll just have my eyes closed when I sleep. I won't look at it.
Yeah, it's fine.
You know? But she drives them back to Martin's house, and Brett tries to get out too, and Rebecca says, "You're not coming in my mother's house." He's like, "Well, why? Who cares?" And she says, "Because she's crazy." So, you know, we have it laid out. Rebecca walks Martin up to the front door, and Martin stops and says, I think there's like a lady who keeps coming over that mom has been talking to her, and her name is Diana. And of course, Rebecca's face changes because, of course, she's heard that name before. Mm-hmm. And she sort of gets down to Martin's level and says, you know, the same thing happened when my dad left, you know. So I think the implication is like 10 or 12 years ago, when my dad left, mom also started to talk to Diana. Right. Mm. And so their understanding is like a symptom of her mental illness. She's under stress. She starts to have this behavior and like a relationship with someone who isn't there.
Okay.
And she's saying, I know that when I was your age, I had terrible dreams. Then Diana was in them. But that's all she was. And then mom was doing okay. You know, so okay. We just have to understand that this is what, unfortunately, this is something that mom is doing. Yes. Right.
Wait, and they share the mom.
Yes, they share the mom.
Parent. Okay.
Yeah, so Rebecca's dad bolted, left, and then Paul is here and clearly trying to do research and like try to help his wife, and unfortunately killed by some sort of demon woman who, of course, her name is Diana. Yes. I don't think you're going to be surprised to hear that.
Yeah, and I'm sure get to know more about her.
We sure will. Just then, their mom, Sophie, abruptly opens the door and is like, oh, what's going on here? And she says, Martin, why are you home, little mister? But he sort of just shrugs her off and says, she'll tell you, and then goes upstairs. It is the middle of the day all of a sudden, and the house is pitch dark.
Not great.
Rebecca says, well, the school called me. They say Martin isn't sleeping. And Sophia says, well, can you blame him? Paul was everything to us. She's like, okay, well, mom, have you been talking to a therapist? Because, like, this seems like a time that you should be. And Sophie's like, I don't need to be telling a stranger my problems. I'd done that before. Okay. And, of course, Rebecca's like, yeah, and you're going to have to do it again. Yeah, but Rebecca cuts to the chase, having been through this before. It's like, so how long have you been off your medication? Because that's what happened last time, and if this is happening, I have to assume that you haven't been taking your pills. Upstairs, Martin has taken the initiative, and Martin's just packing a suitcase. Like, he's packing a bag to go to Rebecca's. He's not taking no for an answer. And when he goes to head back downstairs, he sees his mother's office is kind of ajar, and it says a window inlaid in it, and when he goes to peek in the office, a figure slams the door shut from inside.
No.
And of course, when we see the hand, it is a figure with long, pointy fingers. Downstairs, Sophia snaps at her daughter, isn't going to take any question about her mental health, obviously. She's like, do you think that I wanted a parent alone? I didn't when your father left, and I don't want to do it now. Do you know how hard it is to raise a child without a father? I mean, look how you turned out.
Okay. Rude.
Also, it's like Rebecca's like, I'm clearly doing the best I possibly can. Yeah,
I'm surviving.
Also, like, I have an apartment. I have whatever this guy is. Yeah. Like, I have a job. I'm doing, like, that seems fine. What do you expect of me, you know? But she's like, okay, look, I'm going to give you a couple days, and actually, Martin's going to come home and sleep with me. And Martin is immediately there. She turns and, like, I'm going to get Martin. And Martin's already there with his suitcase, being like, let's go. Of course, this makes Sophie panic. And sort of like start begging them, like, please don't leave, don't take him. But of course, Rebecca's like, listen, I'm asking you to let me take him to my house just to get some sleep, and we'll come back in a few days. This is not forever, but it seems like maybe we need to sort of revisit it. Which I'm like, how else are you supposed to deal with this? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, get him there, get him some sleep, and then obviously you're going to have to talk to your mom and figure out how to get her support. Like, a million people have dealt with this exact thing forever.
The kid needs, like, stability. Like, you need, we need to have a plan moving forward.
Exactly. And again, like, we heard Paul in the beginning be like, well, it doesn't have to be an intervention. We'll call it whatever. Like, clearly, like, people need to be involved and be like, okay, well, how do we get you back your medication or get new medication or figure out, like, how to support you during this? Obviously, your husband was brutally murdered at his workplace. And you have to now parent during that. Anyone would also be in a bad place. So it's like, this is the best possible situation. Once they get over to Rebecca's place, Martin goes to unpack his little bag. And Brett says, you should call and let the CPS lady know you're doing this. That's why she's there. But Rebecca's like, I don't want him taken away. Like, she's going to stay with me. So I understand that concern as well.
Yeah.
There's just a couple days. And he says, I'm going to be honest, like, watching that exchange, are you doing this to help her or are you doing this to hurt her? And Rebecca, of course, says, how you go kick rocks and get the hell out of here if you're going to talk to me like that. Kicks him out and makes Martin a sandwich. And he eats it while she brushes his hair. And, like, they have, like, a nice moment. And Martin says, if mom is crazy, does that mean we're crazy too? And she says, no,
no,
no. So night falls, Allison, and the only light on the street is this glowing, blinking tattoo sign.
Yes.
Which sends, every time it blinks, sends red light into the apartment, which would kill me.
It's like that Seinfeld episode where they put a Kenny Rogers Roasters across from Kramer's apartment. And it's just like they keep the sign on all night and it's bright red.
Absolutely. There's a Kenny Rogers Roasters. And you think that demon was bad. That light's on all night.
All night.
Allison, in the middle of the night, Rebecca wakes up to the sound of scratching.
Nope.
And she sees a figure. You're going to know which figure it is. It's a lady with bad old scraggly hair.
Yeah.
And she's scrabbling at the hardwood floor, ruining the hardwoods. And this is clearly a rental.
Yeah. It's like, lady, like, also, like, scratch on something that, it, like, can be replaced more easily.
Get her, like a scratching post.
Like a scratching post. Yeah, like a cat scratching post. Get her a cat tree.
And much like Paul called out for his coworker when he saw the woman, Rebecca says, Martin, girl, that's obviously not your 10-year-old brother.
That is not your brother.
It's a demon gal, and she's ruining your hardwood, and your landlord's going to tell it to you about it, you know? Ugh. Allison, when she's looking, the red light of the tattoo shop blinks on, and in the light, Rebecca sees nothing. So again, the same thing. The light comes on, the figure's gone, the light goes off, the figure is there, scrabbling, clawing at the hardwood. Rebecca's terrified. And she starts to stand up. Again, because what do you do? Like, this also, this person is now between you and the door. And also, your underage brother is there. The light goes on. Hey. The figure's gone. The light goes off. The figure stands and lunges at Rebecca.
Yeah.
She bolts and turns on the overhead light. Nothing's there. Mm. Meanwhile, I'm like, where the fuck is Martin all this?
Yeah.
She has the same thought. She runs, can't find him. Runs into the bathroom. He is asleep in the bathtub. And he's smart because, unfortunately, he has been living in his mother's house. He has a flashlight on while he's sleeping. Very smart. Like, he's a smart little guy.
Yeah. Light seems to be part of this, so.
Yes. Yeah. So might as well. In the morning, they're both up. Rebecca hears a knock on the door. It is Emma, the CPS lady, who said, did you take Martin? Because you're not allowed to do that. Rebecca's angry at her immediately, but Emma's like, look, your mother called me. Rebecca says, oh, so CBS takes orders from nut jobs? It's like,
that's not helping.
No. It's like, I stopped in to check on her. She is lucid. You know, she is Martin's legal guardian. So if you want to get custody, you have to do two things. One, you would have to, like, bring charges against her, essentially, like, that you think that she is unable to parent, which means you're facing a long legal battle. But if that's what you think it is, then you just know that. And also, you then have to prove that you're a responsible guardian. And she says, are you ready to go to war against your mother and prove yourself as a guardian? And Rebecca says, I'm a reasonable guardian. And Emma looks at her weird, scary posters and one bong on the coffee table. I was like, they could have made it more fucked up a little bit.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, that's just like anyone.
Right, this just seems like someone who doesn't have a ton of taste and also smokes weed, which is most people.
That's most,
like,
people.
It's not terrifying. She's not like, you know, like,
doesn't seem like endangerment. There's nothing. No. Like, if that was all I knew about somebody, I wouldn't be like, well, don't let them be around kids.
Like, yeah, I'd be like, they're a poser or something, but they're certainly not a bad person.
Yeah, it might be a tough hang, but it doesn't seem necessarily irresponsible.
But Emma says, regardless, this is where it stands, and I'm going to take Martin to school, and then he will be returning to his mother's house. So Rebecca kind of has to eat shit at this point, and Martin heads off to school. And once he starts to pick up around him, he's like left all his little toys and stuff around, she sees that there is a emblem. And as Rebecca starts to pick up Martin's clothes, she sees there's an emblem scratched into the hardwood floor.
No.
That kind of peeking out from the corner of the rug. She lifts the rug and she sees it's not a figure. Well, there is a little tiny stick figure. And then next to it, it says the name Diana.
Uh-oh.
Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, when I'm done freaking out over my security deposit.
Yeah.
I would move the rug to cover it more. Because I don't want to see it, but I'd go grab my brother and head out of town for a while. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I'd tell my mom what's up and be like, we can't, look, this lady's coming around again. She's scratching stuff in the floors. Like, she wants to be known. We don't want to know her. Like, what if we just started over?
I think that's, yeah, go with an open heart. Try to figure out where you could come down on us versus Diana.
Yes.
March into spring with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered 1-gig internet for $59.99 per month, plus a $150 gift card and price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with a free modem, free installation, and free Wi-Fi your way home. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and manage user access for all connected devices with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires May 6, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
With that, Allison, we are now back in Rebecca's childhood. She's flashing back to her own experience as a child when she was around Martin's age, when her father left and her mother started talking to Diana for the first time. And we see little 10-year-old Rebecca. She's drawing in her room. She's like, Mom, Dad, me. And she turns around to find her notepad suddenly gone from in front of her and a scratching sound coming from inside her closet. But she reaches up and flips on the closet light, and we see her notepad fall from a height of about 5 feet, like somebody was holding it and suddenly dropped it.
Like an adult was holding it?
Like an adult, like a tall, weird lady was holding it. And she looks at the drawing, which is a pretty standard, normal stick figure drawing kid would do.
This is the family, yeah.
Her dad is scratched out, and a new figure stands between her and her mother. Baby, it's Diana. It's Diana. The people's princess, as I call her.
It's hard not to sing that, like, Toto song, like, Diana, like, but it's Rosanna.
Oh, hell yeah. Brett comes to pick up Rebecca, and it's like, hey, I just want to talk to you. Like, how are you doing? She's like, oh, yeah, I'm good. I just need a ride, you know?
Yeah.
And he says, can we talk about last night? Because I feel like you kicked me out, even though I was just trying to be honest with you about what's going on, and I want to be supportive. And she, like, just clearly needs like him to physically transport her.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, okay, come to my mom's house. I need to find out about Diana because clearly this bitch is real.
Yeah, she's hanging around.
Yeah. So they get to the house and it looks like her mom isn't home. And so Rebecca finds the spare key and says, if you see my mom, just, you know, hit the bricks and head out the back door. Brett takes it downstairs. Rebecca goes upstairs. It's this beautiful, fat, like craftsman style homes like you'd see in California. Like, gorgeous. A lot of house for just two people, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But stunning porch, like, beautiful, like, inlaid, like, glass. Not necessarily stained glass, but, like, beautiful glass within the interior doors. Stunning. And right away, Rebecca's noticing some weird shit. In the office, the lamp cord looks like it's been chewed through. And she sees a photo of her mother as a girl standing next to a very strange little girl holding an umbrella, even though they are both standing outside in broad daylight. Mm-hmm. And when she flips it over, it says on the back, Sophie and Diana, Mulberry Hill, California. Mm-hmm. Even more helpful, Paul's papers were obviously returned from his workplace after he met his untimely demise. Yes. So she finds Paul's box of records, which means she finds the medical records from her mother's time at Mulberry Hill, which is clearly some sort of psychiatric facility as a child, right? And we hear a male doctor's voice say, patient 283 admitted October 6, 1984. And I'm thinking, oh, this will be the mother's therapy sessions. It is not. It is Diana's therapy sessions.
Oh.
I was like, damn, Paul really did his research. I'm like, jeez, how did he get his hands on that?
Yeah, that'd be hard to get for Diana.
Right. And from the 80s, she pops in a tape, of course, and we hear a doctor say, and the doctor's a man, of course.
Obviously.
The patient suffers from a unique skin disorder that manifests itself in an extreme sensitivity to light.
She has a history of violence, and she has become obsessed with the girl in the ward. Here she is now. Keep her chains on. I was like, keep her chains on.
Keep her chains on. It's not a zoo.
And we hear Diana clank into the room and say, keep the lights out. And Diana says, the doctor says, Diana, I've heard you've been very bad again, which is what I think getting mental health treatment was before.
Yeah.
Not even today, like tomorrow maybe.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, I heard you lashed out. You hurt your friend Sophie. Why would you do that if she's your friend? And Diana says, because she was getting better. That's not a very friendly thing to do.
No, that's mean.
Allison, we hear another tape. It is the doctors submitting Diana to an experimental light therapy. That, of course, kills her. Oh, no. I was like, damn, this place.
What?
Yeah, you literally hear her screaming and howling and then and him saying, shut off the machine. Like, it's the 20s. Like, she's Frankenstein's monster or something.
Yeah, 1984. I mean, we were alive.
Barely.
I mean, barely, but. Yes. But-
and apparently it was so bad, they have a photo. It looks like she has turned to ash. Like, it looks like her human form has been dissolved. I was like, yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure that light therapy was not going to work.
Like, what did they think was going to happen?
Look, it's the 80s. You can afford a starter home. Springsteen was on the radio. And doctors might turn your deranged daughter to ash by accident. It was a different time, different decade. Also, in Sophie's room, Rebecca finds the drawing that Diana altered from when she was a child.
Okay.
That her mother clearly kept. Unfortunately, as she's standing in her mother's room. You know, I think her mom's probably not thinking. I think her mom's just doing whatever she can to get through the day at this point.
That's true.
Because of Dirty Diana. Unfortunately, the bedroom door slams. Rebecca runs to it and, of course, tries to open it. And from the other side, we hear Diana say, stay away. I won't be sent away again. We then see Rebecca hauled in the air, much like Paul was, marionette style, and dropped from the ceiling just as Brett bursts into the door, bursts through the door because she was screaming.
Understandably. They
grab the box of evidence and they book it out of there.
Yeah.
They get out seconds before Sophie and Martin come home from school. And he asks, because this is understanding as a child, like, have you been taking your vitamins, Mom? Of course, she doesn't answer. We know she's not taking her medication.
Of course not.
And she's saying, you know, I'm feeling a little better. Why don't we just have a movie night tonight, just the three of us? Mm. And Martin says, could it maybe just be the two of us? And Sophie smiles and says, we'll see. Well, Allison, you better believe, of course, it's not. No. They're watching Auntie Mame, which I'm assuming either has a connection to the theme or was free to use. Because I was like, what 10-year-old is going to sit for Auntie Mame? I don't know.
Yeah, that feels like a fair use decision.
But while they're hanging out, they're having a good time, and Sophie opens up their son and says, you know, I really missed their dad. He made me feel really strong, and I needed that. And Martin's like, well, you know, Rebecca's really strong. Like, if you need to feel strong, you should call Rebecca. Which, again, is like, he's like, you got to talk to Rebecca about this, you know. The only other parent, or the only other adult I know. Sophie scoffs, Rebecca seems strong, but when things got tough, she abandoned me. Girl, there's a demon in your house.
Yeah, that's like, it's just extenuating circumstances. You don't really get to, like, cast stones here.
And Martin says, you know, Emma told me, sometimes the strongest thing you could do is face your fears, Mom. And Sophie says, you know what? You're absolutely right. Unfortunately, she's going to take it in the way that she wants to take it, which is she gets up and shuts up all the lights.
No.
And Martin starts panicking because he knows what's about to happen.
I'd be like, well, not with me here.
Yeah. And she sits with him and holds his hand and says, I want to tell you about my friend Diana.
See, I left her alone for so many years. I abandoned her. But now she's going to stay, okay? As long as I keep my head clear and you keep the lights out.
And of course, as we're talking, we see Diana creeping toward up behind Martin
out
of the darkness.
She's creeping around.
And Martin's not a fucking idiot, so he's panicking and freaking out. He knows this is not good. And he looks up to see Diana crouching on the back of the couch and she touches his hair. He, of course, screams. He runs and he turns the lights on. And Diana says, don't do that. She doesn't know any better. She doesn't mean to. And Diana backhands Sophie so hard she flies over the ottoman, popcorn everywhere.
It's also crazy that she's, like, strong.
Yes. And I think that what we're mapping onto is, like, an abusive relationship where Diana – or, like, where Sophie's trying to, like, always be, like, she doesn't know what she's doing. It's not her fault. She doesn't mean to. It's like, well, regardless, she just hit you and knocked you over the ottoman. So whether or not she means to is irrelevant.
Yeah.
But I think we're to think that she's – this has been an ongoing, potentially lifelong thing that keeps coming back to her. Mm-hmm. So Martin, to his credit – is not having it. Over at Rebecca's, Brett and Rebecca go through the box of evidence. And he says, okay, so catch me up here. Your mom was in a mental facility. So who's this Diana? There's a knock at the door, and poor little Panic Martin ran all the way there.
Oh, poor Martin.
I know. And he says, it's getting worse. Rebecca sends Brett to the store for groceries, which again, Brett is very nice and a really a stand-up guy that he's holding down for her.
Yeah.
And she, Martin and Rebecca sort of compare notes about what the fuck Diana even is. Like, what have they seen? Like, right. What is our understanding of this? Because she's saying, like, just so you know, I believe you. You're not going to have to, like, I'm not going to question you or like, Emma, she doesn't believe it or whatever. I something is going on, right? So she shows him all the documents because Paul was researching Sophie and Diana. And based on what she's found, Diana was found locked in a basement when she was 13. After her father had died by suicide, and we see a photo of his suicide, and next to his body, he wrote in blood on the wall, "She is in my head."
Oh.
And Rebecca continues, Diana had a very strange skin disorder. People say she was evil and could get inside people's heads, probably based on the suicide note, and she would change people. But eventually she was taken to Mulberry Hills Psychiatric Hospital and met Mom. And I think she got into Mom's head and is trying to stay there ever since. But she only comes around or only is at full power when Mom is at her worst, which is why they link it to going off her medication and, like, going through this big stress, you know?
And that stress being, like, is the idea that that is coming from her husband being killed by Diana? Or is it predated, like?
Well, it must predate it because he was redoing the research. So if things had been fine,
yeah,
then you'd think he wouldn't have been researching it. So actually, I don't know.
So she's just kind of like been off her meds for a while.
Yes. Yeah.
He's a casualty of kind of this piece of thing. Okay.
Yeah. And then she's able to sort of, it's sort of like, it seems like a cyclical thing where, like, the worse the mom is, the stronger, like, Diana could sort of, like, drain her and, like, feed off of her, sort of.
Yeah.
Which I was thinking, like, oh, it is vampirism, but in, like, a alternate way. Like, it's not a literal vampire drinking blood, but, like, she is clearly using her in this parasitic way, I suppose. And of course, the doctors killed her using an experiment to light therapy to cure her skin condition, and she died horribly. And Martin says, well, if she's dead, how could she be doing this to us? And they're both like, that's a good question. Great, we got to figure that out.
Yeah.
But she says, I don't know, but I think Mom is Diana's only connection to the world. Like, the only way she could do this is because she's glommed onto her. Wow. But if we break that connection, then we could potentially help Mom. And Martin says, I don't think that the Diana's going to let that happen. Mm-hmm. Rebecca says, well, yeah, but how do you know? And Martin says, because that's what my dad was trying to do. Mm-hmm. Like, we already see what happens, that she's so powerful.
Right.
If we do this, isn't she going to kill us too?
Allison, great question.
From the hallway, a knock at the door. Rebecca answers it, but then realizes there's no one there. The knock isn't from the front door. It's from inside her bedroom closet door.
Well, you'd hate to hear that.
Allison, she goes to the closet. And luckily, the light is on the outside because it's dark inside, and she's able to flip on the light before opening it. Of course, there's no Diana. She hears Martin scream, and Martin is getting dragged into the darkness under the bed. And Rebecca is barely able to grab him and rip him out before he is dragged under there.
But she gets him.
And then Sophie hears a knock at her door at her house, and she opens it to find both of her kids and some guy named Brett that her daughter is sleeping with. And Rebecca says, Mom, we need to talk. So we are here for the intervention, and we're here to talk about this. And let's get out of brass tacks about Diana, right? So I sit down for a pizza dinner. Martin is having pizza and a glass of milk, a favorite dinner of mine as a child.
I only like one of those things.
And Rebecca finally says, Mom, can we talk about Diana? And Sophie's like, yep, Diana's a good friend of mine. She's just been back in town, you know, things with Paul. And Rebecca
says, talking about it like that is pretty scary. Yes,
it's not good because it where she's at mentally is not great.
No.
And Rebecca says, Diana's dead, Mom. We found her obituary. And Sophie says, you know that people could fake those.
Oh, what? Excuse Who? Me? Excuse me?
And in a very classic boomer move, I think, Rebecca tries to press her on it. And so Sophie changes the topic entirely to be about how Rebecca abandoned her when she was the implication is when she abandoned her is like when she was like 18 or 19. Like,
it's
this
like, well, lifetime of living with a mother who's dealing with some pretty intense literal demons. I mean,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to strike out on your own and start a new life.
Yeah. And she's like, look, I know why you're here. You feel bad about leaving me, but I realized that was really important. I had to go through that because that's what I was doing to Diana. And now Diana and I are back together, reforging our relationship. And, you know, I just think maybe you feel bad that we don't have that kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca says, Mom, there is a dead woman in this house. And Sophie says, Sweetie, yeah. Ghosts aren't real. But I'm going to head back up to bed. So Sophie heads up to bed to presumably whisper to Diana for hours, yeah. You know. And so leaving Rebecca, Martin, and Brett at the table, and she says, we should just get out of here. But Martin implores her, like, can we please stay? Like, we clearly need to be here with her. Mm-hmm. Rebecca says, well, it's not safe here. And Martin points out, it's not safe anywhere.
Yeah.
She's come to your apartment.
She's ruined your floors.
So it's just better. It's if we're all together, at least we could try to figure something out. I'm like, Martin, very smart little boy. Rebecca agrees that she and Brett will stay, but they do so take some like precautions where they're going through and like taping the light switches on with duct tape, which is also from the short Lights Out short. All the lights are blazing, and Rebecca is going to sleep in Martin's bed with him while Brett sleeps on the downstairs sofa. And you know, she says to him, you don't have to stay, honestly. I know this seems really, you must think we're all crazy. And he says, no, I don't think that. I think you're doing a really kind thing, and I think you're doing your best, and I'm not leaving. I'm like, Brett's a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
They kiss, and she says, okay, you're going to get the bottom dresser drawer. I'm going to clean it out. You're going to have so much space for your stuff when we get back.
Wow. It's really happening.
It's happening. So they all settle down to sleep. They were all stay the night in the house with Diana, the malevolent ghost.
She's hanging
creature.
Around.
I wrote here, Brett is toast. Rebecca goes upstairs to Martin's room, but before she does, she goes to bed. She knocks at her mother's room and says, "Hey, I just want you to know we're staying the night. I love you. I'm sorry this is happening, but we're all here." And Sophie opens the door a crack and says, "I'm sorry too. Like, can we start over tomorrow morning? And I'm sorry about everything I said." And Rebecca says, "Yes, let's do that. That sounds good." And then Rebecca, before she goes, says, can I ask, did you ever hear from Dad after he left? Did he ever send letters or anything? And Sophie says, I'm sorry. No, he never got in touch. I know you blame me for him leaving. And Rebecca says, I honestly don't. Like, he chose to leave. Like, I don't blame you for that.
Okay.
You know.
That's gross. That's
yeah.
Perspective.
And we see Sophie step out and she hugs Rebecca. And then we literally see Sophie get pulled back into the room by her sweater. Like, again, like, it's an abusive partner. Like, it's like,
yes,
they're having this moment 100%. That's like, but I have to go deal with somebody screaming silently at me or something for hours on end. Yes. Well, and I'm just going to shut the door in my daughter's face, right? So Rebecca goes to the bathroom to check to see if her mom's meds are there. And she sees two bottles that are full of pills, and then there's a empty prescription bottle in the trash. So she's thinking, okay, so maybe she's taking some meds, but this one, clearly she has not been taking it. You know, but like, okay, maybe I can get a refill for her and like talk to her about it. Again, trying to make plans, you know. She gets into bed with Martin and she says, we're going to make sure that mom gets better. Just get some sleep. Allison, all of the lights suddenly go out in the house. Who will survive this film?
Who will survive?
Well, Brett's done. That's going to be a feature rep on Brett any moment now.
Simply too kind.
Yeah, he finally got what he wanted, so he can't continue to live. I think that the kids will both live, and Sophie, the mom, that's her name?
Yes.
Will die.
Okay.
I'm pivoting from my initial guess.
Okay, great guess.
Sofas, recliners, love seats, everything is better in leather. Discover the new leather collection at Ashley, where bold meets durable. And wait a minute, who's been finger painting on the couch again? That's okay, leather is easy to clean. The new leather collection at Ashley is built with the durability you need for the whole family. Yes, pets too. Luxury is meant to be livable. Shop chairs starting at $499.99 and sofas at $599.99. Ashley, for the love of home.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Rebecca wisely has already lit some candles because apparently she can't shut off candles. Diana has not got a handle on a candle.
Yeah, it's like, can she breathe?
A great question. I mean, she could
like
punch.
Blow something out.
She could punch. I mean,
right.
She could
drag. She could scratch.
Could she punch the flame out with her, like if she punched the air would send it out?
Right, like could she catch on fire? I just have a lot of questions about her physicality.
Luckily, Rebecca also has a wind-up flashlight. She runs downstairs. Brett is not on the couch. He's outside seeing if it's just their house that's out or the entire block. Allison, the whole block is out. There's a power outage.
Not good.
An inopportune time for a power outage. In the meantime, Rebecca goes out into the basement. You hate to see it. To try and find the fuse box. Martin wakes up in a panic because his sister's gone. And he grabs the candle. And as soon as he steps in the hallway, Diana is on top of him. She is terrifying him. She grabs him by his foot and drags him down the hallway, screaming. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, he's able to get loose, still with the candle in hand, and runs down into the basement and finds Rebecca and says, never leave me again. But she's too busy trying to, like, get the fuses figured out. But also, it's not going to work. The whole block is out, right?
Yeah, if there's a power outage, like,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do.
And she's like, I can feel something else is wrong. He's like, what would be wrong? She's like, oh, it's a trap. And they look up, and Diana is slamming the door shut. So now they are trapped in the basement. Brett comes back inside. He immediately starts getting his ass absolutely handed to him by Diana. He is able to stave her off using the light of his iPhone, but she slaps it out of his hand and it flies into a corner.
Oh, no.
He ends up running outside, but Allison, it's completely pitch dark because the street lights are even out.
So there's nothing illuminating anything. Get in a car. Turn some car headlights on.
Allison, you are one step ahead of him. He is running through the darkness up the driveway, and Diana grabs him and lifts him off the ground, and he's able to hit the key fob, and the headlights blink. And she
amazing.
She drops him from like a height and he hits the ground, but he is safe and alive.
Okay.
Allison, Brett runs to the car, jumps inside, and peels away. And Rebecca and Martin can hear him. And Martin says, is he leaving us? And Rebecca goes, no. But he has driven away.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving only one person left in the house to come to the rescue, their mother, Sophie.
Yeah.
Finally, Sophie, this is like the breaking point of Sophie realizing that Diana is now hurting her children.
Yes.
And she starts screaming at Diana. And Diana is like, can seemingly speak occasionally in human languages, but then is mostly like screaming and whispering and making ghost sounds.
Yeah, yeah. She seems more ghost sounds and like creaks and screeches and scratches. And
she says, you need me, Diana. There is no you without me. You can't treat me this way. And she turns and she has her new prescription bottle in her purse and she starts to take her medication. She says, I never should have stopped. But before she could take a pill in her mouth, Diana throws Sophie across the room, slamming her into the dresser and sending her pills scattering everywhere. Meanwhile, in the basement, Rebecca and Martin are feeding paper into the furnace. So they have the door open. They can see the flame. So they're throwing paper in and they have found a black light, like a handheld black light, like you'd have in a dorm room, that they could use for illumination. And Martin says, well, how long will we be down here? There's no windows. So even if there was daylight, there's no windows.
It wouldn't help. Yeah. Oh, God.
Allison and Rebecca says, I'm going to just look at the rest of the basement to find supplies if we have any like other light sources. Mm-hmm. And finds written in black light all over the walls, Diana's rantings. And let me read you some. Just like in the hospital, trapped down here in the dark, trying to take Sophie away from me. And sometimes, Diana, I'm going to say this, sometimes you have to recognize that it might be you that has bad vibes, Diana.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Why don't you hold up a mirror to whatever's going on yourself. With you?
We turn and we see mannequins, because again, Paul was in the textiles business. We see
a
mannequin with a really melted, fucked up face, you know, like you have in your basement.
Yeah, yeah. And save it for the holidays.
And it says Diana written across the chest. And she sort of goes down this row of mannequins. All of them are deformed or mutilated until she sees one that is facing the wall. It turns and it screams. And when it turns, it is, of course, Diana. And she has ghostly white eyes and a howling woman's face. She lunges at Rebecca. And Martin appears hitting that bitch with the real flashlight, sending her running.
Okay.
So But because Diane is a very clever ghost, she is able to put something down the flue and sniff out the furnace fire. So now there's no fire down there. And Rebecca says she didn't react to the black light. So we can actually use that to see her, but we can't hurt her with it. So now the flashlight actually hurts her and she's driven away. The black light, you could see her, but it doesn't have the effect of the natural light, right? So they really have only thing that what they do is they start screaming for their mother, like to let us out.
Yeah.
They're screaming. They don't have phones or anything. Allison Brett comes back and he had just fled to go get the cops. So he has cops in tow. Unfortunately, these cops refuse to listen to anything he says.
Cool.
Specifically, you need to use your flashlights in the house. You have to use your flashlights. There's a woman in there. You have to have your flashlight on her. And the cops are like, oh my God, this guy. And they go into the house. The door is standing open and they hear Rebecca and Martin screaming in the basement. So the two officers work at breaking the lock off the basement door. Upstairs, Sophia comes to for where Diana slammed her across the dresser and runs to the door. Of course, Diana has trapped her in her bedroom. And she's screaming, Diana, no, if you hurt my kids, we are never speaking again. Which, like, I think things have escalated past not speaking anymore. But
not talking anymore feels like not enough of a threat here.
Yeah. The cops get the basement door open. They're able to get Rebecca and Martin. They, of course, immediately start warning them about Diana, too. But the cops aren't really, like, what they're saying is not coherent to them. One of the cops sees Diana in the kitchen and confronts her, only to have her, you guessed it, lunge out of the darkness, drag him away. He pulls his gun, and there's an interesting visual effect where he fires his gun, like unloads the clip, and in every blast of light, she disappears.
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
But also, the guns have no effect.
It's not cool. It's awful. But
yes.
But it's an interesting effect that I'm sure makes the movie even scarier.
But unfortunately, Diana is not stopped. It doesn't stop her. She kills the cop and then tears out the other cop's eyes, which I thought was really interesting. But I could have used some eye tearing earlier in the movie. I think because I could have tied it into the light thing, seeing.
Yeah, it tracks with her whole story.
Yeah.
But, you know, a little late.
Yeah. Brett runs in and Rebecca grabs Martin and throws it to Brett and says, get him out of the house. I'm going to go get my mother. Of course, Martin's screaming, don't go up there. Rebecca heads up the stairs with her black light and her flashlight in hand and starts screaming for her mother.
Yeah.
When she gets to the second floor landing, Diana whispers to her, obviously, Diana didn't just kill Paul. She also killed Sophie's first husband, who would be Rebecca's father. Yeah,
he didn't leave.
He didn't leave. He's dead.
I mean, he left this, you know, mortal plane. But
exactly. And it's good that when they die, they don't have to hang out with Diana. Because that would be my other concern. It's like, oh, well, if you kill someone, do we got to hang out?
Right. Like, suddenly it's like a crew. Like,
yeah.
You're like, oh, if I'm dead, like, at least let me do my own thing.
Diana attacks Rebecca, but Rebecca shines the flashlight on her. And this time it's so close and so intense, it actually burns Diana's flesh. So she drops her. Unfortunately, Diana is still a extremely motivated supernatural evil. So Diana is able to kick Rebecca's ass. Like, she's dragging her all over this landing until Sophie screams from behind both of them. And they turn to see Sophie wielding her own gun. She's holding her gun on Diana. And she says, I told you, don't hurt my kids. And Rebecca
feels like a very Maria Bello thing to scream.
Yes, absolutely. And Rebecca sobbing, Mom, she killed Dad. So again, confirmed. Mm-hmm. And in that moment of realization, Sophie fires at Diana, who of course says, that won't hurt me. And Sophie puts the gun to her own head and says, this will, because there is no you without me. And Rebecca screams, Mom, what are you doing? And Sophie shoots herself in the head. Killing herself, causing Diana to burn up in ashes.
That is not where I thought it was going to go.
Yes, and we'll discuss it in a minute.
Yes, of course.
Rebecca leaves, walks down, and finds Brett sitting with Martin, who just saw his mother, just heard his mother shoot herself.
Yeah.
And Rebecca joins him, and she says to Brett, you came back. And Martin says to his sister, and so did you. And they sit together, finally a family. And the overhead lights flicker as the ambulance arrives. And Brett reassures them, it's going to be fine. And that is the end of Lights Out.
Whoa.
So as you can imagine, people had mixed feelings about that ending.
Yeah.
I feel like I understand what they were going for.
Yeah.
But my criticisms would be, one, that is like what a suicidal person's logic is. So it's hard to see that depicted where it's like every person who has, like, there's no person who would do that who doesn't think this is the only option and this actually will be better for everybody else, unfortunately. Yes. And that's hard when we're talking about like a trauma that was visited on her as a child and that we're mapping on a mental illness.
Yeah.
Because like, and apparently there was an alternate ending where like the implication is that Diana comes back and like Diana is the trauma from her death. Which I think is doable because it's sort of like the ending of The Ring, spoiler, The Ring, like realizing that you have to pass it on to someone else so that, her, you know, Naomi Watts' son won't die.
Right.
So I think you can make those kind of grim decisions at the end, but that was not the tone of this movie. And then also, even if you do that, like, you still do see someone mentally ill woman shoot herself in the head, and that's a tough...
No matter like what you've done to build up to that ending, from a logic standpoint, from a theatrical standpoint, like it still is just like that's tough. Like even within a genre that presents so much tough stuff, like that's just that's a tough image,
right? Because like the implication is like that she did free them, like that this was the right move, or that this was inevitable. And again, if you want to say that, that's fine. But then I'm going to need you. This has to be. It's almost like. This was too warm and cuddly of a horror movie to have that kind of ending.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think you definitely could have that ending. You just sort of had to figure out how to land the plane. Because I did like this movie. And then the end, I'm like, well, that wasn't a fun watch by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Well, anyways, what are some fatal mistakes you think were made? The movie Lights Out.
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, it seems like pretty much everything they did at the psychiatric facility where, oh my God, now I'm blanking on the name and I just want to say Vivian, which is incorrect.
Diana.
like all that treatment seemed to probably push towards this ghost vibe.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely didn't help.
Yes. It didn't help. And then, you know, I guess like, if you're on medication that keeps, you know, things in your life stable and static and healthy, like, don't go off that medication. I don't
know. Yeah. And you know, again, it's always hard. You know, it would have been interesting to, like, find out why she went off the medication. Because, like, if it is something that predates Diana, which I think we're supposed to think, like, then this is, it's almost like, like, then you really, if this is about mental illness, you really got to get in the weeds about it. Like, if you're mapping onto, like, then that's something we want to have answered. Like, I don't know. I still like this movie, but it is a really grisly thing to map horror onto with that kind of ending.
I agree.
Other than that, though, I mean, like, Rebecca did her best. Yeah, she was afraid of commitment, but, like, listen, understandable.
She's trying. And
Martin was doing his level best. Paul was doing his best. That first husband probably was doing his best. I do wish we had found out. I wish she had, like, found him in the basement or something. Like,
a little more on that just to kind of... give it some legs might have felt.
Yeah. But again, not to criticize this movie, but simply to say, to see fine qualities and the other qualities. And then finally, where would you place Lights Out on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I mean, I think I'm going to give this a 7. Like the cold open is super scary. I think the general like darkness, scratching, and then of course like when it's mapped onto kind of the idea of an abusive relationship, like there's like emotional tough stuff going on here, obviously, and then the reveal that like Rebecca's father was killed by Diana is like, I feel like that was like a I think a 7 for me. This feels like a 7.
Okay, great.
Yeah, what about you?
You know, I didn't... Oh, man. I'm going to give it a 5. No, I'm going to give it a 6. Because I do think the scary part is the beginning is really scary. The visuals are very well done and scary.
Yeah.
Plot-wise, like, you know, I think it was interesting and I'm glad I saw it. But maybe, I don't know, it's like it was caught between something a little more stylized, like The Ring... versus something that was much more realistic.
Grounded,
which I could have used a push in either direction, I think. But I did think it was scary. And I don't think that... I don't think the director has done more horror since then, because then he was directing What else did he do? Annabelle Creation, which you have not done that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Shazam and Shazam Fury of the Gods. So I think maybe he's moving in sort of a superhero. Yeah. But I hope he comes back. And if I can get my, because he's done other films, I'll see if I can get my hands on them. And would absolutely love to bring them to you.
Yes.
But yeah, thank you so much for listening, you guys. And yes. Until next time.
Kevin Bacon month carries on.
And a very Kevin Bacon month to you all.
And a good Kevin Bacon month to you. And yeah, I guess last thing is please keep it spooky.
Don't forget to follow us at Ruin Podcast and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for show updates. And if you're just as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okolati.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.